On Tucson Business Radio X now, join Michael Shoup and Carolyn Goldschmidt from HOA Law with another in-depth program and interesting guests with Community Law and your host, Michael Shoup.
Hello, hello. Welcome, everyone, to Community Law, live and streaming from the new Stewart Title Studio in Tucson, Arizona. My name is Michael Shoup, and I'm joined by my esteemed colleague, mentor, and legal partner, Carolyn Goldschmidt. How are you today, Carolyn?
Good morning, Mike. I'm fine.
Carolyn and I will be your hosts for the next hour or so, talking about the wide and sometimes wild world of HOA law in business. Chances are that many, if not most of you, live in a community association or HOA, whether it be a single family home community, a small cluster of townhomes, a condominium complex, or even a cooperative housing community. The unifying characteristic is that all owners share a common interest in their housing community. And that is exactly what Carolyn and I hope to share with you in our community law program, to provide you with stories, discussion, best practices, advice that is of common interest to all of you, homeowners, volunteers, and professionals out there who work and live in HOAs. Carolyn, we know each other well, but I'm wondering if you might kind of share with everybody a bit of your background and why community law for you?
Sure, Mike. Well, I've been a lawyer for 30 years or so here in Tucson. And while I was in law school, I was voluntold for my own condominium board of directors. There was a group of people on the board that were very strict and what I would call autocratic, and we had a grassroots campaign to take back the association. So I got on the board. Eventually, I was president, and the day I passed the bar, the manager handed over his 20 portfolio accounts to me to represent. So I truly came up through the ranks.
Yeah, and this isn't your first go-round on the airwaves, correct?
That's right. For probably more than a year, I was on the Legal Hotline show with a specialty show every month on HOA law, a call-in show.
Great. Well, I think and I hope that between the two of us and our listeners, that everybody will become familiar with us, get to know us, get to know our guests as we go along with our show. And I'll share a little bit about myself a little bit later in the show, but I wanted to get to our guests today. We are joined by two guests from the HOA industry, Don Weaver and Mike Paletta, who are going to be discussing with us communication strategies and community associations, including the use of websites and social media, things like that. And I wanted to go ahead and jump right in with our first guest, Don Weaver. He is the president of the Green Valley Council. And Don, I guess to kick us off, what is it that HOAs and their members need to communicate about?
Well, the problem with most of our people who come to Arizona, they've never lived in an HOA. And unfortunately, I don't think our title companies and realtors do a good job explaining what they're getting into. So what I think the board has to do a better job, the boards, is to tell the community members, here's what you've gotten into, here's the rules and regulations that you need to abide by, and it's not something that you should dislike. The key is, though, getting the information out to the members. And I know in Green Valley, unfortunately, we have about 35% of our members who don't even have computers, which is unreal today. So we have to figure out ways. How do we communicate with them as well as ones who do have emails and other forms of communication? So it's a challenge.
Yeah, I guess what in your experience have you seen is the expectation of owners in communities as far as what kind of communication they expect to get, or have you seen that they're in the dark sometimes?
Well, some of them, quite frankly, like to stay in the dark. But no, I think most of them appreciate, our HOA, Country Club Estates, I was president about 7 years ago. We have 535 homes, and we had the block captain system. Each block, we had a person who was the captain. And the way we would communicate when we did with you guys, we did changes in our CCNRs about 7 years ago. We had 27 of them, and we worked with you guys. And we went with the block captains in our board and went out and explained why we needed these changes in our CCNRs, why it was good to benefit for them, protect them. Mm-hmm. And it really gave them a good feeling that our board and people would go out and talk to them.
I guess it almost goes without saying. Did you find that the block captain program, I guess, worked better than email blasts or other kinds of communication because of your demographic?
Yeah. Again, we have maybe 38% in our HOA don't have computers or email. So the only other way we could do snail mail. Well, unfortunately, when you send out snail mail, a lot of people just throw it away. So by going out and communicating directly with them, I think most of them really appreciated that. And they had a lot of good questions. And they learned a lot about what is an HOA, why do we have rules and regulations, and that type thing. So, mm-hmm. And we had training sessions with our block captains. That's very, very important.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's interesting. It seems in some ways like you come full circle between face-to-face conversation to mail, to email, to now we have Twitter and all these different things.
Yes.
And what your experience is going all the way back to the beginning and saying, you know, it's an effective means of communication just to get out in your community.
But, Mike, yeah. I think the key here is the demographic. What's so challenging for all of us in the industry is that the young people want only electronic
right.
communication, and Green Valley, which is predominantly a retirement community, they're not really fully buying into the electronic way, so you have to go back to the old paper trail and face-to-face communication.
But we do have to get with the younger people. We've got younger people moving in, so we just recently with Green Valley Council have gone to Facebook and other means that the younger people like.
Okay.
And it works real well for them. So we've got to be able to look at all avenues of communications to keep everybody informed, and it's a challenge.
Well, I think that is can go without saying. I wanted to turn to Mike Paletta. Mike Paletta is the Director of Marketing and Sales at Cadden Community Management. Good morning, Mike.
Morning. Thanks for having me.
No problem. Thanks for joining us. I guess Don helped us a little bit with the segue. How are you seeing social media playing more of a part in community communications?
It does vary from community to community. I mean, in some cases, we have HOAs where the folks, all they want from their website and communication-wise is to know when's the next board meeting, is the pool closed for repairs. We have other communities where it is really the hub where they do a lot of social events. They set up their block parties. Homeowners communicate with each other. And then there are varying platforms. I mean, with Cadden, we provide a variety of websites for the communities we manage. We have a basic one that we don't charge our associations for, and then if they want something a little more in depth, we have those options as well. What's nice about that is those are websites where it's primarily one-way communication of getting information to the homeowners, and I'm sure this is something we'll get into, but some of the other platforms, Facebook, Nextdoor, the openness of those, while nice for homeowners to be able to voice their opinions, can sometimes turn into a negative place where people get together and in some cases misinformation is spread about what's happening in the community. And it's hard for boards and for management companies to stay on top of that. And then another issue along the lines of the changing demographics, and one of the things we've been discussing at CADN is the, you know, communicating through text. I mean, we do email blasts to our communities, but now we have we're looking at programs where maybe we can contact maybe one homeowner wants to be reached by mail, another homeowner prefers email, a third homeowner prefers text, and there are platforms coming out which can handle all those different ways to reach your homeowners. So you need to be flexible with what's out there. Even another thing we've been considering is after hours, homeowners being able to log on to a site and have a text chat, because that's becoming very prevalent with businesses. You don't want to wait on hold. You want to be able to log on and have an online chat by text with a business and get your questions answered without having to wait.
Yeah. It brings up an interesting question, Don. You were referencing this, the statistics out in Green Valley regarding computer ownership.
Right.
Have you had an opportunity to look at statistics as far as smartphone use?
It's pretty close to the same.
Okay.
It amazes me. I mean, I'm in the upper age group down there, and I think, how in the world can you operate today without a smartphone and a computer? But there's a lot of people out there.
Do you see people making requests for email means of communication or text message communications like Mike is?
You know, we wish we would get those people. What we depend on, we have 74 HOA reps that we meet monthly, except in the summer. And we encourage each of the HOAs to have a communications person, and we disseminate information to them. And the problem we're having, they're not getting it down to the homeowners. And it's very frustrating. And so we're trying to collect more and more emails. And one organization in Green Valley has done an excellent job is Green Valley REC. And boy, they do a great job of communicating. And I think the text idea, Michael's something I'm going to look into, because that I think that's a great idea.
And again, Mike, you were talking about one-way versus two-way communications. It seemed like this text option is one kind of for quick notification of issues.
And that what's nice about that is you can get a homeowner taken care of, get their questions answered. Maybe their manager is out in the field doing a site tour. Not every question a homeowner has requires them talking to a manager or a supervisor. And then that way they feel that they're being taken care of. And really one of the big things, my role as the marketing and salesperson, when I talk to communities that aren't happy with their current management company, the thing that comes up the most is homeowners don't feel like they're being communicated with. They're not, the phone calls aren't getting returned. That line of communication isn't there, and folks really want that. And
they want it fast.
Yes, they do want it fast. In fact, we have in our contract that we will get back in touch with someone within 24 hours. So that's.
And that's your board clients. That's your.
Correct.
Okay.
Correct. Yep.
And what about homeowners?
Homeowners, and same thing. We try to be as responsive as possible. One of the things we started a few years back was a client relations department that could answer questions. But we're seriously looking at this online texting, a text chat that will save homeowners some time and get their questions answered quickly.
Okay. Mike, one of the things that makes my mind explode from a legal point of view is all of these different forms of communication. And, you know, if something deteriorates into a lawsuit, suddenly all communications become relevant. How do you capture and keep and organize tweets and texts? I mean, emails and paper get saved, but what about all of these random ways of communicating?
That, you know, I don't have an answer for that. I mean, I know that our managers, as far as emails go, everything is saved and archived. But yeah, some of this these new forms of communication, that's definitely something that we'll have to stay on top of and look into. As far as the other websites that are available, we don't have control over those. I mean, homeowner can open a Facebook page, a Nextdoor account. You can have multiple homeowners within one community with competing sites with competing points of view. And as I mentioned earlier, sometimes they're not always accurate.
That's right.
And, you know, from a management company perspective, we don't get involved in that, and we try to encourage our boards not to get pulled into that. I mean, you have situations, it's 10 o'clock at night, someone's in a grouchy mood, and they can go on to Facebook or Nextdoor and let loose with whatever their opinion is that day about issues in their HOA. And so in some of those cases, it's really best to not engage because you're not going to change that person's mind. I know with Cadden, we have a Facebook page. We use it primarily for information, getting helpful tips about living, working in an HOA, as well as some of the community outreach we do. But from time to time, we'll get a negative review on there. And my approach is always to answer those comments or those negative reviews, but to not get into a back and forth of, you know, here's why we're right, you're wrong. But it's more of, you know, we're sorry you're having this issue. Let's see how we can get this fixed. Have you tried talking to your manager? Have you attended a board meeting? We're always encouraging them to get more involved. If talking to their manager isn't helping, we encourage them to talk to their supervisor. So really, it's, you have to be engaged. You can't just ignore bad reviews, bad things going on online. But at the same time, as I mentioned, you don't want to get into a back and forth because that can deteriorate quickly.
Right. I just had something yesterday I think I mentioned to you, Mike, which was interesting. Had a board, some board members had come to my office, and they'll be seeing you guys because I've referred them since I'm not an attorney. But they had their communications person on the board who set up their email account. She left the board, is now using that email address and sending out bad information into the community. So the board wants to know what they can do. And I said, well, who's your attorney? And they said, you guys. I said, well, you need to talk to them. But it's things like that's what really is tough in the industry when you've got rogue people out there taking advantage of a situation like that and sending out bad information. And like Mike said, it's tough. You got to answer it, but you can't get into a contest of he said this, we said that. It's tough.
Right.
And one of the common areas where we're asked to get involved is where a group of owners, usually former board members, have a website.
Yeah.
That is not the HOA website, right, but it looks very official. They have minutes, notices of meeting, and then they're completely critical of the board and the association. Mm-hmm. So it's very confusing.
And it's difficult for the board to communicate back that. They have to be very careful from a legal standpoint. So it's really, it's challenging.
Yeah, and it's a changing geography every day.
Yeah, well, again, you're listening to Community Law on Tucson Business Radio. We're having a conversation regarding, I guess you could say, the pros and cons of new technologies, new avenues for communication in HOAs. Carolyn, maybe you could talk a little bit more about that scenario of either a former board member you were mentioning or another community member that might see themselves as the fact checker. We see a lot of that. How might an association begin to communicate or deal with that personality?
Well, first of all, the fundamental problem I see with associations is a lack of consistent communication. Therefore, when I have to call the disgruntled group starts rising up and speaking, they're the voice that the members hear, and the association gets into a defensive position. So I think the elementary rule here is that associations need to consistently communicate with their members. And what I hear from board members all the time, you know, the battle cry of members is we want transparency. But from the board members' point of view, they see members who don't come to meetings, don't open their mail, don't go on the website, don't look at emails, and then they complain that they don't know what's going on. Mm-hmm. But from a legal point of view, as long as the association makes the effort and can show consistency, then it develops its own what we call legally trade dress or identifying logos or names. And then legally, they can go to the minority website and say you are you're creating public confusion because you're using our trade dress, our official information, and you look official. So you either need to stop or put a huge disclaimer right at the top of the face page that this is not the official HOA website or words to that effect.
Mike, have you had experience either with a Cadden site or I don't know what they call the angry sites or the response sites from homeowners popping up?
Definitely. I mean, with several managers, and we've had homeowners. Generally, it's Nextdoor. Sometimes it's Facebook, homeowners get on there and they vent and they. And a lot of times, and like Don was saying, a big part of this is education and what seems to get the ball rolling on problems is homeowners don't understand what it means to live in an HOA. But they know what they don't like, and they don't like people telling them what to do, and not understanding what they've signed up for when they moved into that HOA and not wanting to understand that, they then feel defensive and they use these sites to go on and discuss those issues. One of the things that I regularly have to explain when folks either post to Facebook on the Cadden site or on Google's and other Google reviews is they're confused. They call us the HOA. They don't understand that we're the management company. Mm-hmm. The board makes the decisions. We are working on behalf of the board, but they call us the HOA. And so I have to clarify that. They're like, well, you guys did this. And it's like, well, no, we didn't do that. Your board, on behalf of your board, we're enforcing the rules that you signed off on. And some of that education would help a lot of these problems early on, but it's tough. I know that... within my own family, folks that have moved out here to Arizona from the Midwest, they had never lived in an HOA mm-hmm. before. And it helps when you have a good management company, too, because sometimes you get a letter with a complaint about, or a violation, and maybe it's they sent it to the wrong house. I know my mother-in-law, she got a letter about a big blue pot on her front patio, and she goes, I don't own a big blue pot. What are they talking? And having never lived in an HOA before, she was offended. She's like, oh, I can't believe, she took it personally. And so management companies, managers, they also need to be sensitive to how they handle those things. But I really think a big issue is the education. As Don was mentioning with some of the real estate folks, that being upfront with people when they move in mm-hmm. to an HOA, that would help with a lot of the issues. Folks that are going through a property manager, that was another. I recently mm-hmm. did a flyer and a thing that we posted. We worked with a property management company, and we wrote up a sheet that described the differences between property management and HOA management. So we had an issue with a woman that lived in a condo that we managed where her property manager told her, sure, you can have dogs here. It's no problem. But the HOA, you can't have dogs. Mm. But she thought it was us. So she was mad at us. She was going to call a lawyer. And we had to explain to her, it's like, we didn't tell you the wrong thing. Your property manager did. And some people, they don't know the difference. So that can cause some real issues.
Yeah. I think one of the things I find in Green Valley is sad is we have HOA boards that really don't know the proper procedure, how to manage, how to run meetings. And I'm always recommending they need to get legal advice, also property management companies, because they need guidance. And the things they do, they mean well, but they're going out and creating all kind of problems. And if they had the right direction, and that's one thing we try to do as Green Valley Councils, we have you guys come down and do seminars. We do training sessions. but unfortunately some of the people who need it worse don't come. Mm-hmm. So it's really sad when I meet with some of these HOA boards and see how rogue they are and how they don't understand. They mean well, but they're creating a lot of problems, and it's... So I think management companies and legal advice is very important in these situations.
I guess because of your position working with self-managed boards, Don.
Yeah.
What do you say to a board that comes to you maybe with a problem and you say, you know, management company, get advice, and the response is, but we've been doing this for 30 years. We don't want to make a whole lot of trouble for our community. How do you respond to something like
that? Well, the biggest issue I get when I mention getting legal advice or a management, we can't afford it. Like my HOA, we have $25 a year dues. Now, a lot of them much more expensive. But I tell them you can't afford not to, because if you make the wrong decision, go out and really get into a lawsuit, you're going to pay a lot more than if you had the proper advice. Some of them listen, some don't.
And, you know, with third parties, you brought up earlier communicating with title companies and realtors, right, that being kind of an area of friction. Mike just
right.
brought it up.
Yeah.
Have you seen strategies? Have you deployed strategies for effectively communicating with property managers, realtors, title companies about the HOA's rules and restrictions?
One of the things, we just had a strategic planning session about 2 weeks ago. One of the things we've identified we need to do a better job is get the realtors involved. And we don't have realtors as part of Green Valley Council. We have management companies. We don't have problems with management companies. So we need to do a better job of getting our realtors involved. And we did have a project where we were going to take over an old golf course and make it a park. We had several realtors who chaired some of our committees. They did a fantastic job. So we're going to do more to get out and talk to realtors. They have their meeting every Tuesday. We need to get out there and explain to them what we can do for them and how they can help us. And we haven't done a good job in that area.
Yeah. Mike, have you had the ability or instances of connecting with realtors maybe more effectively through social media or websites?
Not so much through websites, but we have early on when I started at CADN, one of the things that I did was I reached out to Tucson Association of Realtors, and we sponsored a couple of their breakfasts that they had, and went and had some time to speak at their events, and we have there's a good group of realtors that we've worked with and that have sent folks our way, and we always appreciate that, and those are the good guys. But yes, there's definitely more, and we could do a better job of connecting with them and educating them. In some ways, I think they see us as a blockade sometimes. They, you know, the homeowner has not paid, they have violations, they haven't paid their dues. Mm. Now they're ready to sell their house, and we're in the mix there, and we're holding up the show, and so they see us as the bad guy and the blockade between them making that sale. So, you know, getting everybody on the same page would be helpful.
Well, it's interesting. I'll take a moment, I guess, to share an experience I had on that topic. I had a client who shared with me one of the ways they tried to directly address that distance with realtors. And they went out and they watched the listings in their community and found the realtors who were consistently listing properties in their community. And they invited them to a community event. And they provided them with a packet of it, basically their welcome packet, mm-hmm. And said, here is our community in a packet. We want you to be as much a part of our community as our homeowners are, because for your benefit, you're able to sell homes more effectively when you're able to say you are an expert about our community. And in many ways, you're able to assist new buyers or sellers as far as what our processes are.
Right.
So it's not as strange. So again, it's just a very interesting thing that even Carolyn and I, every day we learn something new, a new strategy, and that was a really interesting model from one of our clients.
And that's a really good idea. I mean, one of the things that we do with new communities where we work with some of the new home builders and they have a sales staff on site, our manager that we've selected for that community will make sure and check in with those salespeople. We'll leave a stack of business cards so that folks are aware of that, you know, an HOA is going to be part of the process and that there's a manager they can talk to. And as you guys well know, one of the big issues in communities is parking. And so that's where over the years we've had friction with salespeople where the homeowner comes in and says, well, I have, you know, three kids and there's four cars and there's no on-street parking, but it'll be fine. You can park in the driveway, you can park. And then
and bring your mother-in-law's RV too while you're
at
it.
And then the next thing you know, the community's built, they've moved in, and then they start getting letters from the HOA that you can't park on the street, you can't park in the driveway, but I've got all my stuff in the garage. I don't. And so those are problems that can be avoided if folks have all the correct information going in.
We just did something with Quail Creek, which is a member of Green Valley Council, even though they're in town of Sarita. They have a sales office, just like you mentioned, Mike. And we met with the person in charge of the sales office, and we've got in their welcome packet now information not only about Green Valley Council, but Green Valley in general and stuff like that. And they have been working real well with us to try to indoctrinate the new people about the region and about their own HOA there. They did 54 sales last month. It's amazing how many homes are being sold and new homes are being built in that area.
Yeah.
So that's a lot of people that they contact each month.
Right, right. Well, I think we could just go on and on here. Again, you are listening to Community Law with Carolyn Goldschmidt and Michael Shoup, live and streaming from the Stewart Title Studio here in Tucson, Arizona. Carolyn and I take a little moment to tell you about our firm. With almost 40 years of combined experience, Goldschmidt Shoup, Carolyn and I represent over 400 community associations and cooperatives of all sizes and demographics throughout Southern Arizona. Our small, dedicated staff is committed to efficient, effective, and economical legal representation. I'll take a moment to say a little bit about myself, introduce myself, and we'll get back into our conversation. I have actually worked with Carolyn for the past 12 years, beginning as an undergraduate here at the University of Arizona. I've worked with Carolyn on a wide variety of community association and real estate issues, including covenant enforcement, assessment, collection, and also have some background previously working as a clerk at the Pima County Attorney's Office. Carol and I both are past officers, directors of the local chapter of the Community Associations Institute, which Mike mentioned earlier. Personally, I have a family, wife, and two kids, and I love U of A football. So whenever this kind of stuff gets too much, I recede into my football habitat. So enough about me. Wanted to touch base a little bit about communication policies and practices, Carolyn. We were talking earlier about an issue of different ways, text messages, emails, regular snail mail, things like that. The question that I have gotten quite a bit is, what do the homeowners themselves have a say in about what that information, how that information gets distributed to other members in the community? Maybe they want their HOA to have their email address, but not their other members.
Right.
Do you have thoughts on how that might get abused in some ways and how to?
Well, first of all, it's a little bit of a confused area of the law because on the one hand, in Arizona, under the Nonprofit Corporations Act, the association has to keep a list of names and addresses of all its members and needs to release that to to a member or an owner upon request. It does not require email addresses. Then on the other hand, we have the Plain Communities Act and Condo Act that says that all records of the association are open to members' review and photocopy. So if the email address is in the records, arguably, an owner could ask for it. So what I recommend is that the association has a directory, whether it's published or not, but a directory of names, and get the owners to opt in or opt out of including their email address so that they an owner can specifically say, you can use my email address for HOA business, but I don't want it released to any other member or any other third party. And then the association has a strong basis to withhold that information from owners who want to communicate by email.
So, Don, have you experienced that issue of owners wanting to share information among themselves and that being misused or dissemination of HOA information maybe outside of the board realm?
Well, that's like what I mentioned yesterday. I met with these three members of a board, and this lady was using the email address of the association, sending out false information, and that's how it can be misused. And it's tough.
Right. Do any of the communities you work with through Green Valley Council have policies in place similar to an opt-in policy or how they gather information about members?
Oh, yeah. I think actually, Carolyn, we did one of the law seminars you did. We talked about that. So, no, a lot of the newer communities in particular do have opt-out policies.
Right. And actually, the most common communication policy we're asked to prepare is how members communicate with the association, because there are some members who think they can collar a board member on their morning walk and register their complaint, and it will get to the board.
Yeah.
And it can be dangerous on a board member's side, because the board member might say something that then legally is the association's position because they have apparent authority. So that's the most common communication policy we prepare, how members communicate with the board, and then sometimes how the board's going to communicate with the members.
Well, I think a key too, Carolyn, is being a board member and the training, and I know you guys do, and they need to realize there are certain things that boards discuss and decide in exec session and others that should not be disseminated. And that's a real problem. We have HOA, but a big organization in Green Valley right now that they went too far the other way. They had a policy. Board members could not talk to their members. Period. And it stifled it, but the intent was there are certain things you say in certain sessions, exec sessions, you need to keep quiet. And it's not you're holding anything back, but it might be a legal matter or whatever. And that's a real problem with some boards.
And, you know, that brings up the issue whenever we talk to members about curtailing their communication in any way. What we get back is, well, I have a First Amendment right. I have freedom of speech. You can't tell me I can't say this.
Yeah.
And, you know, legally, that's a constitutional right. And associations are private corporations. So it doesn't apply, even though we agree that there should be transparency and openness. Members do not have the right to go out and say whatever they want when it isn't true.
Right.
Time and place. Time and place. Mike, I guess when you have this need for transparency, and we've talked about communications out, What about the storage of information, I guess, on websites to facilitate this transparency? Do you have methods and systems to store information, and have you found that some are easier than others to store?
Yes, and one of the things in the past few years, Cadden has worked. I don't think we'll ever be paperless, but we say we're using less paper around the office, and increasingly we're scanning in documents, converting them to PDF files, keeping them on files. With the options we offer our homeowners as far as websites, depending on which one they choose, they have more storage space that they would have access to. I mean, we do keep all the documents we have to keep legally, depending on, you know, what the item is, how the length of time we have to hang on to it. And those are scanned in and kept. But a community with a full website, which would be a multi-page website, and that's one that we have a fee for, there's more storage space for that than just the basic website that has a login. Within the office itself, we're scanning more information. And then I kind of want to back up a little bit about what you were just talking about before with the proper information, what should be accessible and what shouldn't be. Because one of the things that I've seen when a community comes to us and they're like, well, and traditionally this happens with self-manage, they say, we're looking at possibly hiring a management company. And they say, we have a website. And I go look at their website, and they have information on the website that shouldn't be public. I mean, and we're very strict about that with all the Cadden websites that we manage for our communities of, you know, what can go on there and what can't. I mean, you can't have, you know, information about discussions about employees and personal things about individual homeowners and whether they're paying their bills or not and things like that. And so, yeah, I've run into that in the past where, like I said, self-managed communities don't necessarily recognize that that's a big mistake and can get them in a lot of trouble. And they've got it, you know, on the web for everyone to see.
Mm-hmm. So do you have actual written policies then that you share with self-managed communities when they approach you as far as what you post and what you won't post?
We would, off the top of my head, I can't remember if we have a written policy, but I know that our manager would advise them on best practices in that case, and certainly we would, encourage them to convert over to a Cadden managed website because those are integrated in with the accounting system we use and better for communication. But, you know, a lot of times communities, they want to stick with, they have a board member that has a background in web design and they want to stick with their own website. But yeah, definitely in those cases, we say if you're coming on board with us, these are things that you want to have on there and these are things you do not want to have on your website.
Right. Carolyn, are there things that are jumping out at you that you've seen on websites that kind of make your hair stand on end?
Well, the main thing I see, and again, it's typically self-managed associations. They put all of their financial records, minutes, their internal operations documents on the website without a password, so that the entire World Wide Web can look at their information. That's the one thing that really drives me a little crazy. And then when I talk to the board about it, they usually say, well, it's too much trouble. You know, our members don't want that. That's the main thing I see. Other than that, you know, I think a well-constructed website has the governing documents in a non-passworded place. So a prospective buyer or anyone else who might be interested, a member, can get to them easily. Information about the community. And then everything else behind, in a special residence area that's passworded.
I think the key thing, too, with minutes, most HOAs put their minutes on the website. And unfortunately, they put members' names about issues on their minutes they shouldn't. Mm-hmm. And that's a big issue I see.
Yeah. Actually, in my own homeowners association, during the annual election, we have a monthly newsletter that a volunteer does beautifully. but before we had a heated election over some landscaping, right? And the editor put in the newsletter or sent an email saying that she was endorsing certain candidates and looked for more information in the newsletter. And I contacted the president. I was very upset about it, actually, because I thought it was unfair electioneering from somebody that had a lot of exposure in the neighborhood. And the editor, with all good intention, didn't understand why she didn't have the right in the newsletter, why any homer couldn't write in what they wanted to say in the newsletter, that it was a community newsletter. And my take on it is it's a corporate newsletter. Oh. It's the association newsletter. Anything that's in it that might be objectionable is going to come back on the corporation. And it's hard for owners to understand that.
It is.
They think it's their association, and why is the board interfering and making—
They think it's like a local newspaper that does have letters to the editors and things.
Yeah. Well, and I think we see that in email communications, too. There's an idea that, you know, board members communicate with each other via email. It's a friendly, fast, and simple way, but they forget that their email communications are corporate communications. Carolyn, have you seen issues with personal emails becoming corporate emails? And
Oh, yes. One of the saddest things I see is when, you know, owners, as I said, have a right to review records. And in one community we represent, an owner sued the association over election practices. And once you're in a lawsuit, there's even a broader ability of discovery to get documents. She wanted all of the emails of all of the board members having to do with association business. And I got a stack. It must have been five reams of paper to review. And it took. And I had to look at every one to make sure there was nothing privileged.
And is that a legitimate request to make a request for personal emails out of a personal mail server?
Well, it is if you're discussing association
That's
business.
Right.
And this same homeowner, because she didn't believe she was getting everything, subpoenaed the hard drives, which you can do. And some of the board members were communicating on their work servers. You know, that case got settled very quickly.
Well, I think if anything, I mean, is there a takeaway from a story like that as far as what boards can do to avoid that?
Yes, and this is something Mike Shoup and I talk about all the time, is have a dedicated email address for your board business. Don't use your husband and wife address. Don't use your work address. Have a separate dedicated address. And this, we talk about it all the time, but it's so hard to keep to, is board members really shouldn't be communicating by email. The whole purpose of the open meeting law and transparency is so that members can hear the deliberations and the decision-making of the board. So that needs to be done at meetings, not by email.
Right.
So have a dedicated email. Keep your, you know, as Mike Paletta said, one-way communication is the way to disseminate information to board members. Maybe ask questions to get more information, but don't discuss.
Mm. Well, I think we have covered a lot of ground today. We've moved from issues with communicating without computers to issues communicating with computers, mm-hmm. All the way to records requests and proper and safe, prudent communications as a board of directors. One thing as we kind of wrap up our show is a disclaimer that any information shared on our show is not, and nor is it intended to be, legal advice. No attorney-client relationship is intended or created between the listeners and Goldschmidt Shoup. However, if you're interested in seeking specific advice or legal representation from Goldschmidt Shoup, you may contact us at our office by phone at 520-265-4462 or by email at office@gshoalaw.com. You can also visit us on our website at www.gshoalaw.com, where you can learn more about our firm, our services, and be able to also listen to our broadcasts here on Tucson Business Radio at your leisure. Carol and I both look forward to being able to share again in the coming months more topics stemming from assessment issues to voting matters, security in your community. And what I'd like to do, other than just thanking very much on behalf of Carol and I, both of our guests, Mike and Don, today, is I want to give Carolyn the last word, and maybe we can make this part of our show. If there is one thing that homeowners and volunteers and community associations should remember about effective communication, maybe what would you say to them?
Do it. Because the worst thing that I see happen repeatedly is for the association to be in a defensive, reactive position, mm-hmm. because a group of owners has taken the leadership role in communicating with the owners. So if you have consistent, regular communication between the board and the committees and the owners, it'll go a long way to try to upset the rumor mill that I know is active. We have two sides of the coin: apathy, people not paying attention at all, or people paying too much attention and making up their own stories about what's going on.
All right. Well, if in doubt, communicate, I think, is what we can say. Again, on behalf of my co-host Carolyn Goldschmidt and our guests, Mike Paletta and Don Weaver, this is Michael Shoup. We want to thank you again for listening to Community Law. Everyone have a wonderful day. Thank you very much.